Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Hey everyone, I am here again without Brent. Brent is actually installing a GPU-powered sprinkler system into Satya's private World Cup field where a lot of the teams are training right now. So instead, I am joined by the amazingly interesting Colette Multini, who just, actually, I'll let you introduce yourself. I'll talk about why you're here and how we met. Colette, say hi.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Alan, thanks for having me on podcast today. Colette Multini here. We met a few months ago when I stumbled across his post about his hike on the Pacific Coast Trail. Caught my attention. I'm also out here on the West Coast, but I have never actually hiked the trail. It's on my bucket list. We got talking about our crossover here, about working in tech and working just on engineering teams in general, IT, working with data, and decided to collaborate on a post on Substack. And I'm going to dive into that here and a little bit more about my background today.
Cool. I'm so excited you're here. And there's a little map behind me. You can see if I'm my finger there. That's the PCT right there.
There we go.
And I think both of us, and I you contacted me and I went through and read a bunch of your old posts. I go, oh, hey, someone else cares about the human side of tech and how people interact and interpersonal awareness and empathy, which we'll get into in a bit. But I had written a post. And for those who probably have read it, but I had written a post. So when I was hiking, I spent a lot of time thinking and figuring out just a lot of self-therapy. I'm not going to say self, guided therapy based on what I learned in therapy before. I did a lot of reflecting and thinking. And I got to a point, 1,500, 1,800 miles into the hike, where I realized all these things that were distracting me, this buzz, this distractions. Life, anxiety, all stuff. It was gone. It's like, oh, it's quiet. It was like the moment when like there's a humming light. You don't notice it's humming until someone turns the light switch off. It's like, oh, it's quiet. And I can't say it stayed completely quiet since then for me. But what that did for me is now when there's a buzz in the background, I notice it right away. And maybe not always right away. I notice it though. And it's sometimes it's louder than others, but I can tell when it's there and when it's not there. So Colette read that article and then suggested a collaboration, and she wrote a great article called Reading the Buzz, Getting Past a Quiet No. And it was a fun read, happy to post it. And I want to talk a little bit about it for those that maybe who haven't read it or maybe those who want a little bit more background on what happened. So I think I want to start with, you know, I don't know about you. I read a lot. And sometimes I read something, I go, oh, and I nod my head and go, that's a much simpler explanation of something I've been thinking about for a long time. And I had a few of those moments reading this article you wrote. So you talk about these four moves, the pause, ask, listen, and reflect. And I go, yeah, duh, of course. They're intuitive. You go, yeah, of course we should do these. Why do you think so many tech people still miss the signal to think about those things in the moment?
Yeah. Now, and thanks for the feedback on the post. And again, really just honored to be able to collaborate with you and post that and get that out to your audience, of course. I want you to picture, you know, being in that meeting, and I opened about this in the post, right? But, you know, I think a lot of us have been in that setting where there's a big group. You have a lot of people who are maybe not technical stakeholders in the room. You have some higher ups. Maybe you have a partner in there, like a consulting partner that's helping to build out something with your engineering team. You had a lot of different roles in the room. And sometimes I find, and particularly speaking to this experience, where I didn't notice the subtleties, I didn't take that pause. It's easy to be carried away in the moment and be really focused on the technical aspect, making sure you're going to get through UAT, making sure this is going to roll out to production smoothly. You're focused on making the deadlines that perhaps, you know, higher up some senior leader has set, regardless of the various steps or failure rate that you've seen in testing along the way. So it's easy to get carried away and get focused on that. But missing it, and this is one of the things I talk about, I mean, really, it's not so much about the feelings aspect. It's more you have to think about the cost that downstream it's going to cost in terms of time, in terms of having to redo things, rebuild things, scope creep, having stakeholders downstream push back. So as much as it's hard to do, it's critical. Now, to your question, why do so many people miss it? I touched on that lightly, right? It's easy to get distracted. But I think often this whole reading the room and this skill set of empathy, it's really conflated with being something more of a so-called soft skill. We're so focused on developing our coding, our skills related to our everyday jobs, that this can be easily missed, even though it is a key part of your job. And that's what I really bring to light in writing in an understandable way.
Yeah, boy, a lot of it. I got this when I read the article too, but in that conversation, just a lot of reflection on myself. Like, I've done that too. And I, I talk about the buzz and, I haven't, for really my own personal choice, mostly gone back to work since I got back from the trail, but, take the ability to take that step back. Cause I think of all the times I've been caught up in the moment and actually even not at work, there have been times, this week where I get so caught up in my head on whatever's going on that I forget to do the things that I've actually worked on a lot, which is pay attention to how I'm coming across, how people are hearing me, how what I'm saying. And we all forget. So I've missed that signal so many times. And then I would hope, and I think that now that I've reflected on the buzz some more, I'm better at it. But was there, on the trail, I figured out the buzz and where it was coming from. And that's helped me a lot. But was there, how did you get here? Was there a moment when you figured out that, you were missing the signal, or just over time, it kind of built up over time? I think it happened in both ways, but kind of what was your journey to recognizing that?
Yeah, now this is a good moment too. I can introduce myself just a little bit more in my background. I realized in the beginning I focused on more how we connected, but a little bit about my background. I started my career in insurance, and it was in a leadership program right out of college. So not like strictly analytical base, but I moved into an analytical role within 2 years, and highly technical, of course, working with systems, programs, process, highly technical. And at that point, I was introduced by a mentor of mine to a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0, a really famous book. Has a lot.
I'll tell a story about that in a minute, but please go
okay.
on.
Okay. Yeah. Do tell. I'm curious about, and I took a few things from that book and I activated it, but I'm going to be quite honest. It went into my garage. It collected dust for many years. Up until a few years ago. I think, I reached this point. I've been going in my analytics career now for over a decade, working closely with platform engineering teams, implementation teams, and of course, working with business stakeholders who are less technical. And a lot of my focus had always been on the technical aspect. I don't think it was one pivotal aha moment, one interaction, but it came about roughly about 3 years ago, 2023, where I really started to think about it. I grabbed that book out of the garage, dusted it off, started reading more articles, looking on YouTube, really looking at the topic, realizing okay, it's time for the next level. And what am I missing in my own success path? And I did find Substack a little bit later to start writing about it in my own trial and error approach. And also to be able to approach EQ and empathy and working with people, human skills, from more of a systems thinking type mentality, which is how I think. I like systems. I like processes. I like to see outputs.
There's a reason we connect, but go on.
Yeah. So that's what I write about to help others. I find a lot of the EQ literature out there is, it can be a bit theoretical or not specific for folks like us working in the world of tech or applicable to our situations or the way our brains tend to think. Here's my ultimate, the ultimate thing that I think too, when it comes to empathy, it isn't the soft skill that everyone likes to file it under. It's honestly one of the most underrated strategic skills in professional life. And in a meeting where it costs the most is where you don't hear that no, or where you don't notice it, where you don't catch on to the buzz, because there will be a cost downstream.
Yeah, I want to so many things I want to touch on there, but what I have to tell my emotional intelligence 2.0 book. There's a story I've told a couple times on the podcast where, I worked at Microsoft in the 20s. It's largely the same company, a little bit toxic, a little bit dysfunctional, but very profitable. That's my summary of Microsoft. anyway, I was doing my thing. I was getting stuff done, and I did a 360 review. Like, as you're a rising leader, we want to make sure you have all the feedback you need. So did this 360 review run by our HR business partner, and they got all kinds of information from my team, from my managers, from my coworkers, from people across the company that worked with me. And HR business partner sat down with me and said, Alan, everyone you work with loves the work you do. They think you're great. You're an asset to the company. They also think that sometimes you're an asshole. I thought, what?
Oh, no.
And I thought, well, and it kind of like, ha 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 at the moment, but it didn't sit in right away. I thought, because at the time, all my role models, whether they were explicit role models or not at Microsoft, were all assholes. That was the way, there were so many of those people. And I thought about it for a while, and then I got some other feedback separately, months later. And I thought, and I found a mentor who recommended that book, and I read through it. I read it right away. I kind of sat there and said, it's kind of fluffy. I guess I get it. And it wasn't until, it took a long time for me to see it. It was a very slow pull. I think it was when I left Microsoft and I got into a few more leadership roles, and I realized what I write about a lot lately is quality of the system. I worked on engineering systems and in testing a long time ago, and I realized that quality doesn't come from an activity the team does. It comes from the environment, the system that builds it, and that system is powered by people making software, not the other way around. And I think once I got a chance to practice it and work on, like, there's these words, psychological safety. I just wrote about this recently. There's a big difference between saying you have it and actually having it. And I did a lot more reading, and the pieces kind of fell together for me. But it was a long, gradual place for me to get to where now I think it's my stance is that we need to build teams of people that are safe and engaged, and there's ways to do that. And that's where great results come from, whether it's software or, doesn't matter what the product is. Rather than micromanaging and beating people up verbally or however. So it took me, it was a while for me to get there. I stopped being an asshole almost right away, to be clear. But it took me a while to really figure out this empathy part. But that also was the first book recommended to me. And I kind of, I get what they're saying, but I didn't know how to apply it. And it wasn't until I did a lot more reading and thinking and even observing leaders who I thought were doing a good job, and also thinking about leaders who did not do a good job, what I didn't like about them, that I got there. So that's my story there. It's a gradual thing. One thing you hit on at the very end of your answer that I want to talk a little bit more about is in the newsletter, you talked about the hesitant yes that's uncomfortable for a quarter. Like, yeah, people kind of live with that and whatever. And then versus the no that's uncomfortable right now and then goes away. Can you talk a little bit more about that concept? I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, totally. First of all, I just want to comment. I love that that was your first book too, and the one handed by a mentor. We have that in common. And like you, I didn't really quite know how to apply some of the stuff in there. There were a few items, right, I could apply almost immediately, but a lot of it seemed a bit fluffy. Not anything against the book. It just, for my, the way my brain thinks, I think in systems, I think in code, I needed something speaking more to that. To your question, though, about the no versus the yes and having that discomfort, I've been in a number of deployments and working to implement different systems. I mean, the technology, of course, has changed over the years. This particular scenario, though, and it is actually based off of a real story. I wasn't making this up. This is a real situation I was in. And having that hesitant yes or that assumption of a yes and having that briefly, and then it just kind of drags out and it festers. People are being polite and you're not giving that out for them to be able to speak up or to maybe have that conversation separately where there's a smaller room and they feel more open, psychologically safe to open up. If you don't give that space to allow for that, it's going to turn into tests that perhaps get obstructed. People don't have time to do it. UAT doesn't happen. There's constant scope creep in the system. Things just do not move as smoothly. If somebody can get their objection up front, the no, and it's uncomfortable, and you can get to the root of it and talk about it, sure, maybe you slow down for a day or two, but you get that out of the way and you move through it and you hear them, you empathize with them. You can adjust early on, be agile with your project, make the changes necessary, get more information, calm their fears. I have found 9 times out of 10, these fears or concerns or no that get brought up, the objections, is just because of a lack of understanding about downstream what is actually happening and what the tool or what the implementation means for them or their team. It's not usually a no that you can't get past. It's better to deal with it head on and then progress through.
Yeah, there's a lot of goodness in there. And something again, every time you start talking, my brain goes, oh, and this, and this, and this. And, you know, Amazon has this thing, and often it's abused, as these one-sentence principles usually are, but disagree and commit, which is good in principle, but bad in abuse. But what's good about it is, and this requires psychological safety, you need to be able to, anyone on the team should be able to disagree with decisions. And more importantly, voice why. It is so much easier to take that quiet no if you understand. Well, it's a loud, obnoxious no if you don't explain the why behind it. And when you can say no, and for reasons, and we can agree on the reasons that make sense, and disagree on maybe on some of the nuance, people want to have their voices heard, and I think that's where some of that. I mean, that's some of the empathy I've learned, is just people want to be heard, not told what to do. And again, the buzz, and I reflect on this a lot. Something I've said for a long time is in times of stress, people will revert to the true versions of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I have done a lot of work on myself to become who I am, I'm not even thinking career-wise, who I am as a person. And when I get overwhelmed, I will fall into the same traps. I won't turn into an asshole anymore. I beat that part out, but I can be, I'll be very transparent here. If there's stress going on, if a lot on my mind, I can fall into insecurity, lack of confidence, little self-centered almost. Mm-hmm. And it's important as leaders, we recognize that can happen. This is the buzz. Like now I notice that as buzz and I go, okay, let me take a step back and think about where I am and why and see if I can reset. And as a leader, that has to happen all the time because you're leading people, not projects, but I'm going to say that. Yeah. We're leading people get the projects done. But if you're a leader, it's about creating that environment and where people feel safe to do their best work. So that is a very long transition into a question around empathy. And you and I both had our journeys on how to learn empathy. And we probably didn't think, if I can go back to whatever age person that was of me at the time and think, I wouldn't think I have no empathy. Mm-hmm. But I certainly have a lot more now than I did then.
Sure.
I believe that empathy is learnable. We've both done that. But have you come across folks who are, it's more difficult? Like how, I'll put it this way. What is your advice to leaders, regardless of how empathic they think they are, to become more empathetic?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Alan, because often the perception is we do think we're empathetic, or of course I'm a good person, I'm a good leader, I'm good at this. We have that bias about ourselves. The exercise that you explained earlier, having a 360, I mean, that's a good starting point. Having open dialogue, having psychological safety where you allow people who are reporting to you or around you to speak open and candidly with you so you can improve. I know for myself, I consider myself to have high level empathy. I have had to work on it and how I express that with emotional intelligence and developing the skill, just like my technical skills. It's something to be developed. But even me, I've had to have open and honest feedback. Like, I'll be truthful. One area of feedback that I've had is sometimes, Colette, you can be too direct. For me, I like direct communication when somebody talks to me. I don't like to have...
That in common. Okay,
if you can say it in two sentences instead of five, please do so, because that's quicker, it's more efficient, and then you're getting to the point, and just tell me exactly what you need. That is what I prefer. And sometimes I fall into that, especially when I am stressed, I'm in a hurry. I had several meetings back to back and I'm trying to get something done. But I have discovered it is sometimes better to delay perhaps a response. Like for me personally, I've had to delay a response, like an email, or maybe pushing out a call if I'm in that state, because if I know my audience and the folks I'm going to be talking to who do not prefer that type of communication, I need to be in the right mindset. So what do I advise for leaders or just people in general who are really trying to develop this, right? Number one, getting feedback, just recapping that. Number two, know that, we all have that inherent bias. And number three, know that this is a skill to develop just like any other skill. Your technical skills, ability to code, whatever you do, leading people, these are things that did not come overnight. You had to develop them. This is a skill to proactively develop just like anything else. The human skills element. And it is important. Alan, just like you said, right? Like with teams, projects and you have projects, but really it's about the people who are working together to make it happen, who are putting in their time, putting in their knowledge, working together cohesively. You could have all the best tech in the world and people with the highest skills in the world, but if they're not meshing together, if you're not leading them in a way that is conducive to them doing their best work, it's not going to matter how many hard skills you have.
A 1,000,000%. Yes.
I
don't think enough leaders realize that. I worked with a leader once. He was, it's a long story, acquaintance of mine. He ran a team and the team was not performing. I thought, this team's all horrible. And in the Microsoft way, what they did was they transferred this leader to another organization and he got there. And he said the same thing. Oh, these guys are supposed to be good. They're not any good. They can't do anything. And then he was finally let go because the problem was not with him. That lack of self-awareness. You need, little story. There are smart people everywhere. It's not just that they're not isolated to any one. They're not isolated to the FANG companies. There are people that would, and I can say this working at Microsoft for so long, there are people not at Microsoft, for example, who mop the floor with tech skills over some of the Microsoft folks I work with. It's not like they're all concentrated. But what I've seen teams really deliver in my time since then is because they've cared about what they're doing. And if you read the Gallup research on engagement, employees only need three things to do to be engaged in their work. And engagement means they're going to do really good work. They want feedback. We talked about that. And building a culture of feedback is important. They want to know why their job's important. They don't want to be the person putting caps on pens in a widget factory. They want to know why is what I do important? And they want to know their manager cares about them and their career. That's it. It's so easy, but so many leaders ignore those things. When I see those things happen, teams just crush it. And this is true. This is not just true for software or tech stuff. One thing I want to dive into a little bit more, that was a little bonus story there, is these soft skills or human skills. And I like human skills better. You know, soft skills, if I recall, soft skills was coined by the U.S. Army in the 60s when they were talking.
Sounds right.
When they were talking about working with machinery or working with not even people, but just like everything from empathy to strategy, critical thinking, the things that are actually important to get stuff done. Today, especially, the coding is easier than ever. The people stuff is still just as hard, if not more difficult. And we're going to get into your AI side a little bit. But how do you think about I should write down my questions instead of winging them. But I don't like the term soft skills for some reason. Maybe it's been overused, like a lot of other terms in our industry. And I like human skills. Do you have a take on that? Like, how do you, when you talk about this with teams you're working with, how do you talk about all the stuff that's not just the technical part of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think I can reflect here a little bit with my writing. I tend to not use the term soft skills. Sometimes I'll use it for explanation or to build upon something, but often I move away from that phrasing. I'm not too fond of it either, truthfully.
Okay.
I think the phrasing has a bit of a negative connotation.
Yeah, yeah. We're so aligned on all this stuff. This is great. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, get it. I understand. Feel it too. Human skills. Given. Yeah, maybe 20 years ago, the term human skills would have not worked as well without AI being so prevalent. But I think now with AI being so prevalent and being able to step in and do so many of those, you know, hard skills, as we call them, you know, you got vibe coding, you hear, you know, somebody in marketing has created their own agent, and you hear these things like about hard skills. It's AI can handle some of that, not all of it, but can handle some of it, or at least give you a boost. The human skills, AI, not really. I mean, AI can advise. It can help, you know, almost have like thousands of articles and knowledge in front of you and create like a summary of maybe guide you like, oh, do this. Or, you know, maybe the tone or sentiment, you know, analyzing, I think it's this from this email I'm looking at. Like, it can help a little bit, but AI is artificial. It does not feel, it does not have that life experience. It does not have, you know, the sight, scent, taste, temperature, the environment of the room. Well, maybe one day it will, but right now it doesn't. So talking about right now, defining these skills as human skills seems like the right placement.
Yeah.
It is a differentiator right now. That's something AI can imitate some element, but it can't do it for you. You still need to learn it if you're going to develop these skills.
Yeah, good segue. So in your Substack, which is Empathy Elevated, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes so you haven't found it yet. Something that comes up a lot is this human beyond AI, or humans beyond AI. So I've talked a lot about AI on the podcast. It's mostly about the technical usage. And this is, I have a much better question for you. What are human skills you think are most at risk of atrophy as AI takes over? And which human skills do you think are getting stronger or need to get stronger? Like, what happens to human skills in the presence of this artificial, emphasis on artificial, air quote, intelligence?
Yeah. The one that comes to mind immediately for, I guess, the one that would atrophy, and this is not for everybody, it depends on how you use AI, but I do think a certain element of your creativity, not the ability to necessarily create writing or art or anything that's, you know, creative, but if you leverage AI fully as, you know, give me an idea or give me, you know, something to visualize, and you don't even have a starting point, that over time, my thoughts would be it would atrophy. I wish I had a study to cite. I know that there, I know I've read some things about this. It's not coming to mind right now, but there have been some studies on this with the brain and how it can change. But I don't want to quote a study. I don't have one up in front of me. But my personal thought is creativity. Like, I know for me, I mean, personally, look, I'm an AI user. I actually do AI enablement as part of my role and implementations and working to train and build agents in the background that are intuitive. Yeah, I do this.
And to AI be clear, and interrupt for a second, to be clear, if you are anti-AI, you are probably anti keeping your job in this day and age. So just figure out how to use it responsibly.
Sure. And that's what I advocate. Human AI partnership is one of the pillars, actually, of Empathy Elevated that I do talk about. And I do bring up, partnership and leveraging it responsibly, as you put it. So I think that's at risk of creativity if you lean too heavily on outsourcing your thought process for creative matters to AI and you're not having like a brainstorming session. I think that's much more productive and you keep the creative juices moving. The skill to build up, and this is a lot about what I write about. Empathy is a big skill to continue to develop, and it's going to become even more important. This is my belief as AI continues to rise. I just want you to imagine something too. This is the example I get. An example I like to give, like if you were to get bad news, perhaps about your health or like a bad like test result or something. I mean, would you prefer like a robot, like an AI, like telling you that news or like a human in front of you who has like compassion for your situation? I mean, you get the same message across, but I mean, I don't want to hear bad news either way about my health or if something happened, but I know personally, I would rather have a human sitting across from me who has compassion and empathy for me to deliver that news and talk through my questions and concerns and my treatment plan, even though it could be exactly the same message delivered.
Or in this day and age, would you rather have a human like your manager tell you you're being laid off, or would you rather get a generic email at 6 a.m?
Yes. Same type of situation. Yeah. Would you rather have it like digitally? I mean, sure. It is the same execution of the same message technically, but the channel, the medium, it does make a difference. We are as humans and evolutionarily wise, we haven't changed. We are generally social animals. We crave human interaction. Most of us. I mean, there are days where I don't really want to talk to anybody.
And to be clear, it's very clear to listeners, I don't like, I used to think I didn't like people. I just don't like all people. And I, as an introvert, I do like my alone time, but also I do know that for me to function, not only be successful in work, for me to function as a member of society that I'm proud of being, I need to have those human skills.
Yeah. And, personally, I mean, I can relate to that. And what you consider, I think the term is ambivert. I'm like in between introvert and extrovert. It really depends on the situation I'm in and the people I'm with.
And there are people I get energy from. I mean, I know people in my life I could hang out with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I would. But also, I know people in my life where an hour is enough.
Totally.
the fun thing while you were talking, I thought about with AI. So AI is, whether it's, it depends on who you talk to, but it's threatening to try and take away some of our human skills, arguably. There's more async communication. More happens, like I'm not managing it. A lot of developers aren't managing a team. They're managing a team of AI agents who don't need empathy. They don't read body language. They don't see the look of concern. Do you think, going back to this quiet no, does AI make that problem worse? Or can it? And how do we avoid it if it's true?
Yeah, depends on the context. I mean, I think with the situation, right? Because if those AI agents that a developer is managing, if they're, I don't know, let's say, for the sake of this example, customer facing, you yourself need to have those skills to some extent, or at least understand how to code the agent to pick up on certain sentiment or to pick up on certain reaction or common reactions or known issues that come up and how to handle it appropriately. So yeah, you would still need, even though the agent themselves don't technically have empathy, in order to get the input and the data or the proper triage of where to send somebody, maybe away from an agent into a live human, if it's customer facing. you would need to have that contextual background.
Yeah. Something I just thought of is what we're seeing now. I think we're very early on in this AI developed code. We're getting more code delivered. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're getting more problems solved or happier customers yet. But if I go back, 15 years ago, we were collecting sentiment analysis from all kinds of online forums, people using applications. And It wouldn't be difficult today, especially, to automate that, hook that right up to, that's one of the sources that an agent should look at. An agent, as just has a bunch of different subtasks. It goes and they all talk to each other and they do a little... I'm not trying to humanize them too much, but the agents talk to each other and they come up with an answer. And that answer may be code. But if one of those inputs is sentiment analysis or I'm thinking out loud here as I talk, but you could get there. And anyway, I guess the point is we're creating more software. It's not necessarily better yet. And we're not solving new problems yet that I've seen. And I think that has to be coming. Mm-hmm. One of my arguments against companies laying off those people, again, they're laying them off in when you dig underneath it so they have more money to invest in AI. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's less about their jobs being replaced with AI, because I do not believe that all of the software needed for humanity to function successfully has been created. Like there's more, you could repurpose them somewhere if that was your prerogative.
Sure.
And I think we'll get there eventually. I think we're just so early in this trying to figure out how to use this thing. And I think we're at risk of losing the human side when I think you and I would say the human side is becoming even more important.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with you. And, right now, I mean, my thoughts on it, we are in a transition process of what we are seeing. We're seeing people get laid off in droves, especially in the world of tech for investment in AI. But I come back and I see that and I question, and I know this from AI enablement, you still have to manage the agents. Things come up, developments, new information needs to be fed. Even if they're relatively autonomous, you still need to be, you have to have that human element, that human input, or a human eventually to route to if the agent cannot handle it. Mm-hmm. And then everything that AI is producing, we've seen this too with code that's been produced. It's not error-free. It needs QA. It needs a human to look at, we still do need that oftentimes a human to, take that step back and look, okay, well, it looks right on the surface, but does this apply to the right situation? Does this make sense for what we're trying to do? I think of it like, I do lots of UAT, testing, and I think of it like, you're passing a bunch of tests. You can pass a bunch of tests and get green, but are you testing the right thing? Does it make sense for your end goal?
Customers don't care that you did that. They just want their problem solved.
Yes. Yeah. I get to do that in the background. So, or have people do that with me. So, we're in a transition phase. I do have optimism that we're going to get through this. It's not pretty what is happening out there. I go on LinkedIn almost daily and I see the layoffs, people in my network. It's getting ugly. But
I had to, when I was looking a little harder for jobs, I was on there more, but it's just like, I don't go there every day anymore. If I step up my job search, I'll have to, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
So for just a couple of questions left here. So you and I, similar experience. We were told in different ways that we need more empathy. And we took the path of getting a book and ignoring it and then eventually figured it out. And we've also talked about the fact that there's some self-awareness that engineering leaders may not know they need more empathy. Like I worked with a leader once who this was the person who said he had no empathy. He had no self-awareness. He was the kind of person who would in an all hands meeting would say, our team has psychological safety. And if you don't agree with me, we can have a meeting and talk about it. Yeah. So, I've, two questions here. I'll ask them one at a time versus my normal eight questions in one. how should leaders, whether they think they need more empathy or not, what's a shift in framing? Like, or what should leaders do? I'll say, what could they do, any leader do today, regardless of their empathy level, to improve their empathy? How would they start?
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on, you know, and for the audience, and depending on your particular situation or where you're at. But I think the first thing to do for yourself, I mean, much like Alan did with, you know, his hike and the buzz and having that space. And I'm not saying you have to go on a big hike across the West Coast, but yes, taking that.
Everybody should walk 3,000
Everybody
miles.
Should do it. Yes. But taking that moment of pause, and I do find being outdoors for me personally is helpful, to be outside, even if it's just outside my home. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, it is summer, so we can get outside a little bit easier in most parts, especially North America, if you're listening in. I find having that pause away from my screen, whether it be my phone, doom scrolling, which I am still guilty of doing at times, but having that moment set aside for self-awareness, even if it's 5 to 10 minutes, and thinking about your interactions, trying to reflect on how somebody reacted to you, looking at some, you know, just thinking through it, because we get so busy. We are so, I mean, I think a lot of us overstimulated in our society today with everything coming at us, taking that pause, be in your head a little bit, have that self-awareness and reflect. That's the first step. And then, of course, I mean, getting feedback, talking to people that, you know, will give you an honest answer, even if you don't like the answer. It's good to hear that.
And listen to the answer.
And listen to the answer.
It's different for everyone. Like, I discovered, even in some of my warm-up hikes, the reason I really wanted to do the PCT is I found it, like, I knew about it my whole life. I wanted to do it, but it kind of faded away for a long time. And then during the pandemic, I fell into a YouTube rabbit hole, as one does. And I was reminded about that. I want to do this someday. And the timing was right for me to leave my job and go do the hike. But one of the things I found that was just exponentially accelerated through my hike was all that time just to think with no screens, just, and not thinking, not like I'm going to think about this, just let my mind wander. And I discovered, it was just great. It was like undescribable. And I can replicate that. If I get really over, if I'm feeling the buzz, I'll say the best thing I can do for myself is, like, at the minimum, go for a long walk around Seattle. Get myself to a trail away from people. Like, I like to pick trails that aren't going to be full of people, and just walk and do a long, like, even camping overnight, because there's no cell reception out there. It's my place. And I think everyone needs to find that place. And it could be as simple as 10 minutes in a darkened room with nothing on, where you can literally hear the buzz. We can hear the background. But it could be different for everyone. It could be running. It could be some sort of other sort of exercise. It could be anything. I think not enough people take the time to do that. They get so caught up in go, go, go. And again, I'm guilty of this too. So I'm not saying it's hypocritical, but we get a moment where we're waiting in line, or where I got 10 minutes to kill before I have to go. What do? We get out our phones and scroll. Oh, what's maybe I missed some world news on Instagram. No, you didn't. I think finding a way to be present with yourself is a great way to grow. And then, of course, I read a lot, and I nod my head sometimes. That's where I get a lot of my opinions and growth from. And some of it comes from Dan Pink. Some of it comes from Amy Edmondson. But I'm curious if you have any beyond emotional intelligence 2.0, which we both had, you know, and experience with. Let's say I'm a leader who I'm taking the time to think, to be reflective, and I want to read some books and get some more ideas on how I can do this. Before I can keep on listing the ones I've read, but I'll give you a chance. Like, what would do you have some books you recommend, or things you've read that you found interesting, or like, where do you find more information on growing here?
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, I do read quite a bit on Substack. That's a lot of my reading and reading from others and their experiences. But if we're going to talk about a book that has had quite a bit of influence with me, Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. Brené,
I love Brené Brown so much.
Yeah. I find it very honest, very real. You know, she's not pretending everything is lollipops and rainbows. She does talk about some of the challenging times.
And I have to interrupt because I've been listening a lot to her podcast with Adam Grant. And I love who she is and how she communicates and how they're – I'll let you finish. I'm so sorry to interrupt. They have this rapport. Like their whole – if you listen to the first episode, their whole relationship started off on an argument and a fight. And they do it on the – they will disagree with each other and figure out – which is fine. Disagreement is okay. And they'll talk about why they disagree and where they came from, what works for them. And it is such – in addition to the content on there, it is such a good – at the meta level, it's such a good podcast on just listening to how – respectful debate happens and how to emulate that. I love it so much. Anyway, Dare to Lead, Brené Brown. I interrupted because I got excited. Sorry.
No. All good. So that's a book that I really enjoyed. Another one, and this one is actually a Daniel Goleman, a very, very popular book, but Primal Leadership, which it's very focused on emotional intelligence. And I know you said aside from emotional intelligence 2.0, but Primal Leadership, that was a key book. I read that last year.
Yeah.
And I was able to extract more out of that in terms of like applicable to business in general, which that was helpful. But in general, I mean, a lot of my, I do try to read frequently. I aim for about one book a month. Yeah. If I can, I would love to do more, but time. But Substack is where I do get a lot of reading and independent authors and just perspectives that I hadn't thought of in those moments. Also reassurance sometimes seeing like, okay, I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I see that too. I see that too. Well, we have filled almost an hour here of wonderful conversation. Colette, I knew I liked you when I started reading your post, but just talking to you today and nodding my head so much has been so much fun. Thank you for being here today. And anything else you want to say before we sign off for today?
Yeah, Alan, I just want to say feelings mutual. Thanks for having me on today. And I'm grateful that I came across your posts about hiking, the PCT. And I guess I'll just leave, you know, the audience thinking with, you know, the buzz is the room talking, and your job is to give it permission to be heard. Listen, just ponder that.
Yeah, I'll ponder that myself. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. I'll be back again sometime soon, maybe with Brent, but maybe with Colette, because I'll do the AC testing podcast or whatever. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.